It's time for Valley Edition, a weekly panel discussion on current issues in the Mat-Su Valley, moderated by Mike Malevsky.
Mike Malevsky here at Big Cabbage Radio in Palmer, Alaska. Who's on the line?
Hey, Mike. This is Dr. Ann Zink. How are you doing?
I am doing fine. Thank you very much for taking the time to call in today. Dr. Ann Zink, who was appointed Chief Medical Officer for the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services, Division of Public Health, back in August of 2019. I was wanting to start out with a couple of very specific questions. And one of them is, with your experience, your broad experience, what would you say is the most important one thing, and I know there are many, that you would suggest people to maintain health in what is the continuing aspects of the pandemic?
Yeah, I think that the very base, the fundamental core of any sort of health is your physical and mental health. And that physical health, I think about your diet, your nutrition, and as well as your physical activity. So those are just the fundamental cornerstones of supporting a healthy immune system, a healthy body. There's a great little video called 23 and a half hours. And I think it's a little bit old at this point, but it still does a great job analyzing and asking if there's one thing you can do for your body and for your health, what would it be? And really what he argues through a series of studies in a great cartoon fashion, you can just Google the video, is to spend 30 minutes a day moving your body. Getting out, walking, being active. That's probably the single best thing that you can do for your overall, both mental and physical wellness.
Well, thank you. Thank you for sharing that. Because I've asked a variety of people what kind of questions they would like to have asked as we talk about what passes for the end of a pandemic or the beginning of the next one. And very often, there were very specific questions, and one that I might throw out right now has to do with, as people look at the fall and they're hearing about the availability of yet another vaccine and also the flu vaccination available, questions about, well, should we get both of those? And that gets to be somewhat complicated. Can you comment about your sense of where we are with, okay, say we're 65 years old, let's start there, and you've had all of the other vaccinations. What process should you use to decide whether getting ever more is appropriate?
Yeah, and that's a great question and one that we get a lot as well. The short answer to that is, when my mom asked, I said yes. You should get your flu and COVID booster. So that's the short answer for someone over 65. But the longer answer is more complicated. And so talking to your primary care doctor, talking to a pharmacist, talking to a public health nurse can kind of go through someone's individual risk factors, because it does depend on if you've had COVID or if you've had problems with vaccination in the past or your other underlying health conditions. In general, like as I mentioned before, taking care of your physical and mental health is the cornerstone. That's going to help support your immune system through the winter, through respiratory season. But we have additional tools that can reduce the risk of hospitalization and death. And vaccines, honestly, are probably one of the safest, if not the safest thing we do in medicine, and likely much safer than even over-the-counter medications. So it's really important that we look at side effects, we understand safety profiles, that we're always asking those questions. But when we look at large population studies, they continue to be remarkably safe and remarkably effective at reducing the chance of hospitalization and death. But they're not black and white. We oftentimes, people say, well, it didn't prevent it. Well, actually, no vaccine fully prevents it. They have different levels of protection that wane over different periods of time. And your risk of anything has to do with the risk of getting it times the risk of being protected, or what sort of protection you have. And so if we don't have a lot of COVID spreading or we don't have a lot of flu spreading, regardless of your protection, you're not going to get it. And that's what we see with many diseases that have really become, the biggest example, smallpox. Like, smallpox has been eradicated. So your risk of smallpox is so low, it's not recommended you get a smallpox vaccine anymore. But things like flu and COVID continue to circulate regularly. We are expecting likely a challenging flu season this year. And so just like we layer up with a warm jacket when the weather's bad outside. Layering up your protection with vaccination can help to reduce the risk of getting severely ill and being hospitalized or potentially dying, particularly for someone over 65.
Got it. Wendell, I'd like to look a little bit further afield here. I've noticed, for example, recently there were, and we keep receiving indications that places around the country are changing their approach to mitigation strategies. New York City is gradually moving back from some of those strategies that had been in place. And there is an increasing probability that people be traveling. And so they're going to be passing, we're going to be passing through different zones. But we start in Alaska and presumably we return to Alaska. How, in your opinion, does Alaska sit in this patchwork of different approaches to mitigating strategies? So just a couple of comments about our own state.
Well, yeah, I mean, you do see really different strategies across the country. We have a beautiful, diverse, incredibly large country where different things make different sense in different places. We are a home rule state where really that authority resides in the local authorities, not at the state or at the federal level. And that extends all the way out to school districts who really have their complete independence on how they run their schools. And that's not determined by the state or by the federal government as well. So you've seen a whole patchwork across the state. We also have 229 federally recognized tribes, and they also have the authority to make decisions for their tribal members that may be in line or may not be in line with a municipality, with a borough, with the state. And so we see a variety of responses across the state. I guess in general, I would say that it's been impressive to me to watch Alaskans find ways to work together throughout this pandemic. And through these very nuanced, different ways that different areas have done it based on their own prevalence and their own priorities as a community, we have experienced about half of the deaths per capita as our peer states or even as a nation as a whole. So this has been a long and hard and very trying pandemic. We still lost thousands of lives, but I am incredibly grateful for Alaskans finding ways to work together, and I think it could have been much, much worse. I hope that we'll continue to work together to reduce the risk of infectious diseases overall. RSV, we always have high rates of in the state, influenza, COVID, tuberculosis, other preventable diseases, even things like, you know, car accidents, suicides. We have a lot of work to do on a lot of health conditions. And the same measures and very similar things work in those spaces as well. Part of it is the healthier we are, it's also a lot cheaper. And so to have more money in our system to go to our schools and to go to our roads and to go to all the other things that are important to us, the more that we can spend effort and time on prevention rather than on later treatment options, the healthier we are, the more productive we are at work, the more people we have for doing jobs, and the less money we have going towards healthcare and the more money we have towards all of the other things that we want to do in life. So we need to move that direction.
Yeah, thank you for that description of the state. Now, many people are aware, many of our listeners are aware that you've been involved in this process from almost literally day one of the pandemic. I'm curious how your own sense of things has evolved. If you can put yourself back, well, let's go 3 years back and say, you certainly had an understanding of various viruses and so on, and then along came COVID, and now the years have passed by, and we've looked at the responses of the health system and so on. How would you, what would you say your biggest takeaway for a change in you that's happened over that time?
Been a lot. I mean, I've oftentimes described this as the fastest learning curve of my life. There have been so much that I have learned, you know, personally, everything from, you know, additional vaccinology and immunology to just the way and the diversity that, you know, people respond to different challenges. You know, I see that in the emergency department practicing clinically, but it's a whole new level when you're looking at the whole state or the country or overall of the world. I think that one thing became clear to me during the pandemic that I still really believe to this day, but I think was a learning point during it. And that was when I looked around states or countries or communities that did well with COVID and are still doing well with COVID. It wasn't about a certain policy. It wasn't about if they masked or didn't mask or mandated vaccines or didn't mandate vaccines. it was when a community worked together to improve the health and well-being of that community. And so when there was a mutual understanding of the risks and the benefits and a mutual decision about how people wanted to move forward, people did better. Communities did better. And I think that that still really remains true, and where that kind of shared decision-making with scientists who are looking at the data, with policymakers, with the public, is a really critical tool and really critically important for our overall success as individuals and as well as a state. And that's part of the reason why we did these, you know, public health echoes every single week for 2.5 years, was what ways could we get the information out and also hear directly from patients and from providers and from municipalities. And we did echoes on all sorts of topics with schools and municipalities and seafood industry and all sorts of groups, but that shared. And then I guess the other thing that I've it's really highlighted during this pandemic is our really incredibly broken infrastructure within the public health system that made answering and asking basic questions really hard. And that was really hard on our staff because they wanted to get the public information, but it was infuriating for the public who wanted to know better about what's the data show, how many cases are in my community, how well are the vaccines working. And until we develop better tools to have better information for both the scientists trying to understand the information and for the public, it's just going to lead to more mistrust and put us really in the backseat of being able to respond to any health challenge. So I really hope that we can invest in the infrastructures of public health, partner them with the traditional healthcare system, so that we can all move upstream together and we don't have to relive some of these hard-learned lessons this time.
Well, thank you for that answer. I'd like to move a little bit out of your bailiwick into something that has been of interest to me. I happen to have a son and daughter-in-law who have been nurses for 30 years or more, and they're nearing what might be the end of their time as nurses. I also have grandchildren who are moving into the medical field in one way or another, it would appear. I'm aware of one number that has been shared that suggests that at the present time, for example, in the state of Alaska, there are about 1,600 openings for registered nurses. And there is a nationwide shortage, perhaps, of medical personnel. And in particular, you've alluded to a lot of work that's been done and possibly some aspect of burnout happening. Do you have any sense of some specific ways in which people would be encouraged to become healthcare providers, or that the system, the state of Alaska, might assist in making that happen?
Yeah, it's a fantastic question, and I think it's one that's going to really hamper and plague our entire response moving forward. I remember when I was in training in California, it was not uncommon to wait 12 to 24 hours in an emergency department to be seen, because even at that time, healthcare workers were in short staff, and that has only gotten worse. There are things that we're doing from a state level. So, for example, there are more nurses, people who want to become nurses, than we have positions for. So we're working with UAA to expand the number of professors so they can expand the number of their positions. We're working with the Hospital Association to expand the CNA program, the Certified Nurse Assistants, that really help to stabilize and provide incredibly important work at long-term care facilities and other nursing homes. And so working with them to increase those spots. From what individuals can do as they're thinking about this profession, I mean, medicine in the healthcare field is an incredibly rewarding. There's nothing like the immense privilege of being able to be with someone in some of their most challenging moments of life and finding a path through that together. It's an honor that I hope I never stop appreciating and enjoying in that space, but it is hard. And so I really encourage people to find ways to keep balance. I find that me being involved in policy helps me not get so burnt out from the clinical world, but my clinical practice helps me not get burnt out from policy. But we're all a little bit different in what we need in that space. And for me, part of my solution to burnout is being able to do both those things. I can't get mad at the system not getting better if I'm not willing to spend the time to try to make the system better. But I don't know how it's working on the front end if I'm not actually seeing patients. And so that's why I continue to do both.
Very good. Interesting. Mike Malevsky here, and I've been speaking with Dr. Ann Zink, and we've been talking about many things pandemic and healthcare-wise here in Alaska. You've Dr. Zink, you've answered the questions I've provided, and in the minutes that we have left, I'm curious, are there other specific things you'd like our listeners to have as takeaways regarding how they handle life as we have what appears to be a continuing health issues associated with not only COVID, but perhaps some other viruses?
Yeah, you know, our chance to be healthy and well really isn't very much our own hands. There are things that the healthcare system can do to make that better. There are things that policy members can do to make that better. But I think if we all really commit to the healthiest versions of ourselves, we have a campaign this year going on called Healthy You in 2022, focusing on mental health, physical health, spiritual connections, and connections to your community, as well as dietary, and continuing to build those individually. And then two, really staying connected to your community. I love this quote by Jonathan Haidt, that the opposite of addiction is not sobriety, but the opposite of addiction is connection. And I think that the ways that we stay connected as a community make a really big difference in our overall health. There's actually a showing of a video about loneliness that's actually coming up, I believe, in early October out at the Glenn Massey Theater.
Right.
And highlighting kind of that loneliness aspect. And I think that COVID's been isolating and it's been lonely. People have been really frustrated by vaccines and mandates and masks and this side versus that side and being disconnected. We need people together. We need kids in school. We need elders to be cared for. We need to be connected. But that doesn't also mitigate the need for committing to our physical and mental health, as well as using the healthcare tools that we have, such as vaccines, in certain situations, things like masking, to make a really big difference. I think of it like a seatbelt. It's a tool that we can use. Things are not black and white, but we really, I mean, part of why I absolutely love living in Balmer is an incredible community. And I hope that we're able to come out of these really challenging years together. There have been mistakes made, challenges had, nothing has been perfect. We're all human in this process, but we have a chance to really build our sense of community, which will help to make us hopefully the healthiest place in this state and potentially in the world to live. And it's a beautiful, amazing place to raise a family and be healthy and happy and go run up lazy.
Thank you. Oh, you've used the term connected, and I know the Echo series has changed in the frequency in which it's been focused. What would you recommend people do to stay connected with most recent information at the present time?
Yeah, great question there as well. So we are continuing our Echoes, but they're just the third Wednesday of the month. We do advertise them on Facebook and other social media platforms, including the agenda of what we're going to talk about, so that, you know, you can be like, oh, I'm interested in those, or I have no interest in those, to be as useful of your time as possible. We do take questions from the public, and they're from 12 until 12:45, the third Wednesday. We also have lots of other opportunities. There's many things on social media that we and others put together. We have a bunch of newsletters that come out really very regularly. So if you're a healthcare provider, things like the Health Action Alert or the HANS, we have a clinical update where we summarize the most recent clinical literature. We now have a respiratory summary. So instead of just being a COVID summary, it summarizes respiratory illnesses that we see circulating in Alaska, including COVID, influenza, as well as RSV. And it also summarizes kind of the most recent data, understanding of vaccines, CDC changing guidance, and that comes out every single week. So you can sign up for that and have that directly sent to your inbox so you can stay connected in that space. And then we're always open to ideas. I, you know, share on social media, so does our team. We are always open to pivoting to new and innovative ways, but we have found that a lot of the communication has moved more towards people and their individual healthcare providers or other public forums. And so we work on supporting those, even though we do have some of these larger public forums still open.
Okay. Well, thank you. I've been speaking with Dr. Ann Zink, Chief Medical Officer for the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services, Division of Public Health. Thank you, Dr. Zink, for all that you do, both with policy and on the front line, and stay well out there.
Great. Thanks so much, Mike. Thanks for helping to build community with your radio station, and looking forward to running into you one of these days.
All righty. Take care. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye.
You've been listening to Valley Edition, a weekly panel discussion on current issues in the Matsu Valley, moderated by Mike Malevsky. Valley Edition is a production of Radio Free Palmer, recorded at our studios in Palmer, Alaska. The views and opinions of hosts or guests do not necessarily represent those of Radio Free Palmer, this station, or its underwriters. If you have any comments or questions about this program, email manager@radiofreepalmer.org.